Welcome to the Bikepack Adventures Podcast. I am your host, Chris Panaski. This podcast was created so as to share the stories of bike tours, bike packers, and endurance racers from around the world as they embark on amazing adventures. Through their stories, you'll be able to learn the ins and outs of bike travel. You'll get insight into various countries and cultures, hear fantastic stories of their journeys, and through both mine and my guests' experiences, you'll learn about the pros and cons of specific gear, bikes, and bike setups. If you're new to bike travel and considering going on an adventure, I hope the podcast provides you with that extra little bit of motivation to make it happen. The Bikepack Adventures podcast is proudly supported by Panorama Cycles, Redshift Sports, Tailfin Bikepacking Equipment, Race Day Fuel, and Full Cycle Ottawa. Their continued support allows me to focus my efforts on providing you amazing content. Now back to the show. So yeah, you were saying when you were younger, you went to Germany or?
Yeah, I was on a people-to-people sports ambassadors as a basketball program. And I went over to Germany and the Netherlands, and it just absolutely destroyed me for about 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. And
even a couple hours. I did one run where I was doing shows on the West Coast, and then I ran all the way to the East Coast, and just that little bit of a time shift really threw me off.
Yeah, I think the further it is, the longer it is. Like I used to live in Southeast Asia, and it would be 13 hours time difference, and it would really mess you. Like my wife would get really screwed up from it. Like for me, it's about a week. For her, like 2-3 weeks, she just looks dead, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine that's one of those things. You adapt to it a little bit, but you're never going to be smooth transitioning.
Yeah, exactly. In this episode of the Bikepack Adventures podcast, I sit down with Skylar Bulks to talk about his recent Jokes and Spokes tour, a 1,000-mile bikepacking journey that took him from comedy venue to comedy venue across the American Midwest. Skylar shares the inspiration behind this unconventional fusion of stand-up comedy and long-distance cycling, and how he used the tour not only to test his endurance, but also to explore new ways of connecting with audiences. We dive into the mental and physical preparation of what went into the ride, the gear choices that helped him balance performance and practicality, and the challenges of performing after long days in the saddle. Skylar also opens up about life on the road, where he slept, how he recovered, and the unexpected encounters that shaped the experience. From his background as a college athlete and his evolution as a comic to the emotional highs and lows of solo touring, Skylar offers a unique perspective on what it means to chase your creative passions by bike. Whether you're a cyclist, a performer, or just someone who loves a good story, this episode is packed with humor, insight, and inspiration. The Bikepack Adventures podcast is supported by some pretty rad companies. A couple of them are Panorama Cycles and Full Cycle Ottawa. The new Panorama Katadin 2.1 is a gravel rig tuned for long-haul comfort and wild terrain. Built with lighter tubing and progressive geometry, the frame has also been tested to full mountain bike standards for durability and peace of mind, even when the trail disappears and the terrain gets rowdy. With integrated mounts, generous tire clearance, and reliability-first components, it's the bike packer's dream machine. Roll deeper, explore wilder, ride the Katadin 2.1. On gravel roads or cruising through city streets, Full Cycle Ottawa has been your trusted ride companion for over 30 years. Locally rooted and rider approved, they stock top tier bikes from legendary brands like Norco, Cannondale, Cervelo, and distribute Panorama Cycles. From expert service to cutting edge gear, Full Cycle keeps your wheels turning. Ready to roll? Swing by today. Your next adventure starts at Full Cycle Ottawa. Skylar, welcome to the Bikepack Adventures podcast.
Thanks for having me.
How was it?
It was great.
Yeah, I was impressed. Yeah. Because I plugged in all the questions. I plugged in the Instagram and I plugged in your website as well. And it spit out that intro. And I was like, that's pretty freaking epic.
Yeah, I've used it for a couple of things here and there, like to write a bio or like a pitch email or whatever. And I read it. And I'm like, God dang, I couldn't have done that well. That's perfect.
Hey, I got to ask you just because it's on my mind now. As a comedian, do you ever use AI to be like, hey, how is this hook? And like see if it has feedback or something?
I haven't ever used it. I know people that have gone and just had AI like write a set and try it, and just they own up to it. They're like, this set was written by AI, and then they try it out. But I haven't done that. I'm a little bit old school. I was like an English major in college, and I'm like, I really value coming up with and saying things exactly the way I want to say them. So
I feel like that's probably the big thing is, right? Like a lot of comedy, it's focused and it's so important, the delivery and like your own connection to your humor. So if you have AI make it, it's not going to have that same impact, right? It's going to lack something.
Right. It's gotta be personal. People can tell when you're actually opening up, and it's like silly jokes. And I talk about hitting a turkey on a luge or something, but like, that's a very real story from my childhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people can tell when it's genuine and when it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, AI, make this comedy joke for me. And it's like, when I was growing up in India, wait a second. Shit, I wasn't living in India.
If you would have said Indiana, it still wouldn't have been
close. Yeah, exactly. Tell us about yourself. You know, just give us a little rundown of who you are and what you're all about.
Born and raised in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I went to school, you know, here in town, went to a college in Yankton, South Dakota. And that's kind of where I fell in love with the bicycle. It's kind of funny how I got into it, because changed the laws in South Dakota. On the DUI chapter, they said this chapter no longer applies to foot pedal or animal conveyance.
So you either had to buy a horse or a bike.
Yeah. And I can't afford to feed a horse. So I got a bicycle, and Yankton's a fairly small town. And so I was riding my bike pretty much everywhere I went in Yankton. And I always had a driving job too. So it was nice to just not be in the car, especially to go to the grocery store, or, you know, go meet my friends at the bar for a drink, or whatever I'm doing. And so I started riding around. Yankton had a lot of, they called them mountain bike trails. Most of them were very flat, and they were mountain bike trails just because they were gravel.
Okay, gotcha.
This was before, you know, gravel bikes really became a thing, and the whole, you know, evolution of, of gravel, the explosion. It was my old Specialized cross trail. I rode that thing probably thousands of miles, and go through college. I played basketball, got in pretty good shape for the bike, because I was injured a lot. And when you're injured, you had to sit on the sidelines and pedal the stationary bike. That way you could be a part of the practice and not lose your fitness.
Okay.
And so I spent a lot of time just sitting on the bike. One day I told my friends, I could ride my bike over to Gayville. I think I'm just going to do it over lunch break. Gayville is about 13 miles away. And that blew their minds. They're like, there's no way. You can't. It's like, we run more than 13 miles in an average basketball practice. I can do this easily. And so just to prove to them that I could, I did. And after I stopped playing basketball, you know, I rode my bike even more, and kind of fell away from it after I moved back home, and just kind of settled into working.
As you do in that 20s kind of thing, right?
Like, exactly. Yeah. As the later 20s, I was partying too much, chasing ladies, not really taking the greatest care of myself.
Well, I mean, it's bikes are fun and stuff, but it's really hard to bring a girl out to the movies or a bar with your bicycle unless you have a tandem, and they might not be into it.
Right. Yeah, you can try to put them on your handlebars, but that hasn't worked since middle school.
Yeah, yeah. Go for the sexy sound, put some cards on the spokes, and you're like,
yeah, another little old school horn. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have a banana seat, so, you know, I couldn't take a girl home on the bicycle. So, yeah, I came back home and just kind of settled into adult life, you know, just kind of working and not really doing much else. And so I got into stand-up about 10 years ago. It was not long before my 30th birthday, right before my 29th birthday, actually, that I got into stand-up. It's something I've always wanted to do. Growing up, my dad, maybe not the best influence in life, but it was a good influence in comedy. My dad had a lot of Cosby tapes. And so we watched a lot of Cosby. I didn't realize that stand-up was even an art form. We just thought this was one unique storyteller.
Exactly.
That was really entertaining. And then when we got Comedy Central on cable, my brother and I would sit down every Friday night and watch Friday Night Stand-Up. They just had stand up all night long on Comedy Central, and just really fell in love with that. So once I started doing that, I started getting the bike back out, because the comedy club was about a mile and a half from my house, and I was always having a couple of beers while I was there. So the old thing came back. You know, I was still riding the bike to travel safely and not hurt anyone other than myself.
Yeah.
Which I did a few times, but. I got really into it, started getting some pretty good traction, and been really focused in on doing stand up ever since. And I've gotten to do a lot of pretty cool things. I've visited 36 different states. doing stand-up comedy.
That's
and
cool.
And I've met some pretty cool people, some names, some people that I watched on TV growing up. You know, I got to open for Kevin Bozeman and Kyle Kinane, and it was really cool just to get to meet those people and see them work live for free and be able to say that I actually got to work with them.
Yeah, yeah, that's very neat. So like what sparked this idea of combining like stand-up comedy and a bike tour, you know, as opposed to just doing like all the other comedians and just hitching a bus or driving a car or whatever?
Well, last summer, it was always kind of a big goal of mine to do some sort of big bike tour. And so the easiest intro for me was actually just to do Ragbri.
Yep.
So while I was training up for Ragbri, I'd kind of thought about it because I was like, oh, there's music every night. How cool would it be if I could like squeeze in a show somewhere along the way? And I knew I had to do it first to find out. And I realized, you know, how big Ragbri is and how much is going on. And I didn't know if that was actually a reality or not. But while I was on Ragbri, we went through a couple of towns that I've actually performed in. And I got to stop in and have a pizza at a venue that I performed at like a couple of years ago when I was really just getting started on the road. And so that the idea started formulating while I was on Ragbri. And I figured I could also just bike pack it, because a lot of the times when I was first working the road, you're like opening, featuring, and the money's not great.
Yeah.
I was actually sleeping in the back of my Toyota Prius. And I figured I can sleep in a bivy tent or, you know, something small. Yeah, yeah. If I can sleep in a Prius. And honestly, it's a little nicer to be in the tent than it is in the back of the Prius, honestly.
Especially if you're a big dude.
Yeah. And I'm 6'7". So that's a squeeze.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's really cool. Like, I mean, it makes sense in the sense that, yeah, like you kind of mentioned that it's, financially, it's really tough to start out as a comedian. You know, if you look at any job out there, you start at the bottom and the pay is the worst, and slowly you got to build a repertoire and become known. But yeah, the bike's a great way. It's inexpensive to travel, theoretically, because it takes like multiple days more to get somewhere, and right. You got to buy food and all this stuff as well. But I get it.
Yeah. The theoretically is important there. I thought, I was like, man, I'm going to, because my entire month of June, was just that comedy tour, you know, that's all I did. And I thought, man, I spend so much money on gas in an average month. I'm going to save so much. And then enter the food bill.
Now I can drink and ride.
And it was every bit as expensive to put fuel in my stomach as it is to put fuel in the car.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's more fun. So,
Yeah, cool. And was there like a connection? Is there any kind of connection to your background as a college athlete and, you know, that helped to influence this concept? Or it's just you've always been active and it's...
Yeah, it's just that I've always been active. And the like I said, the trainer bike was kind of a part of my basketball experience, because I was pulling muscles in my back a lot. I was twisting ankles a lot. It's just kind of a hazard of the game, you know? Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so, and then the idea, I guess, as well, for, was it a, like, I guess, is it as a personal challenge or kind of an experiment or something else?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both. I have been finding my way back into you know, some health and fitness and getting back some of that higher activity level, mm-hmm. that I had growing up. And it definitely is, you know, a personal challenge to just to see if I could do it. And I expected for it to be fairly difficult. And I was in fairly good shape to go for it. I had put in a lot of good training and stuff like that. But there was a lot, you know, along the way that not necessarily physically, like I was able to complete the rides every day. That wasn't really the challenge, but it was, you know, facing the weather, the uncontrollable aspects, and some of that, it was like a personal growth journey for me too, because, you know, there's a lot of things in life you can't control. There's a lot of things that, you know, I'm trying to get back on track, I'm trying to figure out and stuff, and this, it's kind of a good analogy for it. Like every day you just have to get on the bike no matter what's going on. And I always had a deadline. I have a show tonight, so I have to do this 50, 60, 80 miles.
Cool.
And yeah. And it doesn't matter, you know, like what happens, what the weather is, I have to make the ride. So if it's 100 degrees with 40 mile an hour headwind, I still have to ride. If it's 50 degrees with pouring rain, I still have to ride. I still have to get there.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I was going to ask you for planning this tour is, how did you choose the route and venues? Was it kind of focused comedy first or bike first? Like, you know, how do you decide?
Well, the original plan was to try to hit all of the, we have 13 state parks in South Dakota.
Okay.
And two of them are way on the west end of the state. The original plan was to try to hit all 13 of those in the tour in the month. Logistically, that became very difficult because some of the parks are actually like they're close to one or two small towns that have maybe 100, 200 people in them. Mm-hmm. And so those towns were harder to get a show together. And you kind of, when building like a comedy tour, you kind of have to go where the work makes itself available. You can't necessarily muscle in a show unless, you know, I don't have that big of a name. I'm not Jeff Foxworthy or anything. I can't just call someplace and they're going to be happy to have me. I did call and set up almost all of these shows, worked with a couple other booking agents for a few of them as well. But it really did kind of come together. It started with a framework around those parks.
Okay.
And then where the shows became available. And some of them I already had connections in certain places. So I knew like here and here I've got a couple of anchors and I'll just have to find something between them.
Right. And were there backup plans in case of cancellations, as you mentioned, weather and stuff or mechanical issues, or it was, you know, you just had to make it and hit weather means you got to hitchhike, you hitchhike or.
My fallback plan was the other comics I was working with.
Okay.
So for most of the shows, I had other comics from South Dakota. It was kind of a celebration of all things South Dakota, the tour. And so I ended up sticking to the eastern end of South Dakota, but I had other comics, you know, mostly from Sioux Falls and from the surrounding areas that were traveling out with me. And so if anything went wrong, I would, you know, some of them I might have to stash the bike or lock it up somewhere and just catch a ride so that I do make the show. But you know, then the plan was always if something does happen, I'm going to do kind of like the bike packing racers will go back to the point where they had to get picked up and continue on. I fortunately only had to call in one time, and I actually just posted on social media that I was having a really tough day because I think I was between Stratford, South Dakota and Huron, and I had started really early because I knew it was supposed to be hot, and it ended up, I think it was like 102 at the peak of the day. And I was heading into a headwind that was steady winds of around 20 miles an hour with gusts up to like the mid 30s, low 40s. And once the wind gusts like that, and I'm 6'7", I catch a lot of it.
Like a sail.
Exactly. I'm hardly moving. So there were times that I'm just walking my bike.
But you go downhill really fast.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Especially with that bike all packed up. Yeah, I got 50 pounds of gear on it. We're hauling. But that actually was kind of a uplifting moment, surprisingly, because I had a couple of random people stop just to make sure I was okay, ask me if I needed water and whatnot. And there's one of them that stopped, and I was like, I'm fine. I just got like a resupply. The comics came and brought me some cold waters and some granola bars and stuff like that. Let me sit in the Denali for a little while with the AC on. And they promised, they said, if you get a ride with us, we won't tell anyone.
No, that's the worst because it just puts that thought in your head. You're like, well, maybe I could.
I could just sit in the AC all the way. I was like, no, I just have to do this, right? But there's two different people that stopped by and they're like, well, we saw your post.
Oh, that's cool.
So we wanted to make sure. And I was like, wow, you know, just like a random person driving by that's like, they saw what I was doing and they were on their way that way anyway. So they stopped to check on me and make sure everything was all right. So That was pretty nice. That was pretty cool.
That is pretty rad. And was there any like level of spontaneity, like balancing spontaneity with structure, you know? Like, I mean, obviously structure in the sense that you've got to get to the next venue, but sometimes you see something really cool. You're like, ooh, what if I detour to this town? I don't know. Like, was that there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't plan a route. Okay. I didn't plan a route at all. I knew where I had to be. I didn't know what roads I was going to take. I'm not one of those kinds of people. And part of it is I wanted to ride as much gravel as possible. Mm-hmm. It's nicer. It's more fun. It's quieter, you know. But I knew that I was going to have to change that on the fly depending on the weather. And I ended up facing a lot of rain.
Oh.
I got rained on all but I think 4 or 5 days of riding.
Oh God.
I had 20 some days in where I was at least part of the day in the rain, you know? And so a lot of the time with the rain, I did try to find a highway or something paved. It was just a little easier travel. But there's one, I think it was South Shore, South Dakota. I stopped through just to resupply at a local bar, and the bartender, I had said something about gravel. He's like, oh, if you like riding gravel, you need to take this road by my house out by Twin Brooks. And so I just took, you know, just blindly took that route, and it ended up being a really beautiful, it was a minimum maintenance road, but it was fairly well maintained, but it was just a beautiful kind of windy ride with amazing views riding along, you know, the Twin Brooks and everything like that. And so that was really nice to kind of have that spontaneity to it, to have a little bit of variation.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't always work out for me because I was leaving Corona, South Dakota, heading, I was going to stop off in Summit, South Dakota. And I found this cool little gravel offshoot because I'm going by these cow pastures, lots of rolling hills, and there's not a person to be seen. And the weather was supposed to be clear. I didn't realize people call Summit, South Dakota, the Bermuda Triangle of the Midwest.
Okay.
And this storm started rolling in, lightning storm, really gnarly. And I'm just climbing, and they're big climbs. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's no way it can be uphill all the way to Summit, South Dakota. And then I thought about the name. I wasn't thinking very clearly. I was pretty tired. An old friend from college, a basketball teammate, was at the show the night before. So, you know, we had a couple of beers together, and I'm just like, it can't be uphill all the way to Summit. When do I get to the Summit? Oh no, that's not good.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So I'm climbing through this, you know, lightning storm, and it's rough. And I'm just thinking, like, I'm looking for spots. I've got an emergency bivy, you know, and I'm just like looking for somewhere to take cover in a low lying area in case this storm gets really bad. Cause it was pretty bad, and it was coming in. Luckily it never got quite, you know, over top of me, but there was a time when I was kind of looking around, and there's, you know, it's cow pasture, and I look at the right. cows, and I think, well, the cows seem to not think this is a big deal, so it's probably fine. Yeah. I'm taking weather advice from Bessie.
And I guess like the worst thing too is like if it's all farm field and pasture and stuff, and you even if you put up your tent, there's poles, you know, so it's like you're now the highest thing.
Right. Yeah, luckily there's some power lines going through. I'm gonna stay a distance from those, but get down in the ditch or something and just wrap up in the bivy and wait it out. I ended up making, there's a nice truck stop in Summit where I ended up making it there, and God, I took my first ever truck stop shower, which was way nicer than I expected, and got all my laundry done and waited out the storm there.
Nice. I was going to ask, if it rains so much, like, I mean, you know, like one of the biggest pains with rain days on end kind of thing is everything just slowly gets wet and it's hard to dry it out. Like what was your method with this? How did you handle that?
So, fun thing about things getting wet was my first night of the big leg of the tour. My bike was outside. Big rainstorm came in overnight, and so my bike got wet, and my frame bag I thought was a little more water resistant than it was. So I had in my wallet, in the frame bag, I had my check from the show the night before.
Oh,
and
no.
I went to the bank the next day to try to cash it, and the lady at the bank, the teller, and I were sitting there fanning the check. She's like, if we get it dry enough where you can sign it, I can take it.
Okay. They didn't have like a blow dryer. You're like, let me go to a hotel.
I know. I was like, do you have a hand dryer or something in the bathroom? She's like, nah, we have paper towels. So we put it in the window for a while and let it dry out. Because if I would have, you know, pulled it apart, it wouldn't have been able to.
You should have maximized the time. Be like, you don't mind if I set up my bivy bag to dry out as well, do you?
Right. But the first couple of nights, like I had most of my important stuff in dry bags.
Okay.
Know, so that stuff mostly stayed dry. But I did, where was it? It was Webster, South Dakota, or Wabe, South Dakota. It was Wabe, South Dakota. I was cutting through just after Summit because everything was wet. And so I actually did just get a hotel that night. There's another storm rolling through. So I got a hotel, and the people there were awesome. It was the Circle Pines Inn, I believe. The owners is a couple that owns it, you know, and they're kind of talking to me about what I did. And the husband came out the next day. He's like, yeah, I've always wanted to do a bike tour. He's like, did you get everything dried out? Do you need anything more? We can bring you a blow dryer or something like that. But yeah, I got the hotel room. I actually turned on the heater, even though it was about 70 degrees overnight, just to make sure everything was all dried out to start the next leg. And it stayed dry for, you know, about a day and a half before it
rained on me again. Exactly. Let's talk about the mental and physical preparation, seeing as it's like your first big bike tour and whatnot. What was your training like for this kind of ride? And did you have any doubts or fears about this adventure before setting off?
Oh, I had every doubt and every fear you can imagine. There's a lot of imposter syndrome. Like, why did I set out to do this? I'm not like a cyclist. I've only been into like really riding a bike
at
this kind of level for 2 years. And now here I'm trying to tackle 1,000 miles. And part of that is too, the last three shows of the run, I had kind of planned it to be a close cluster to Sioux Falls. And then a long like loop, and then I'd be done. And it, like 2 weeks out, and then I'd be done. And one of the bookers that I worked for hit me up, and he asked, "Do you want to add another week back up to Webster, South Dakota?" Well, Webster, South Dakota is I think like 250 miles or something like that from me. So, and that's the loop was already complete where I was going to be right back to home. And I did end up spending a couple nights at home, but then going back off on that next one. So that next leg to add, you know, it's like another 500, but that made 1,000 miles. And that was pretty cool to me. But all the way through from the day I left home until I got back home, spent two nights in my bed before I ran off on that last leg of it. I was just beside myself. Like, what did I do? Why did I add that whole extra? It's as much as the entire rest of the tour I'm adding in a week, in a 2 week. It took me 3 days, 2 days to get there, 3 days to get there, and then the 4 days on the way home. And so that was kind of overwhelming, but I had to just put that out of my head and just take things, you know, one day at a time. Just get on the bike, start pushing the pedals, and make today's ride. That comes back to that, like, you just have to get on the bike, you just have to start moving, and then things kind of work themselves out. Like I was even pretty sore towards the end, and I'm just thinking like, it's gonna hurt, and it did for the first, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, and then things get
loosened up.
Right. Yeah. You get into the flow again and you feel a lot better. So that was just, it really is overcoming that first hurdle for me, like mentally, just getting things moving, and then it's a lot easier. And I find that's true in a lot of places in life. But for the training, so I do a fair amount of Zwift. I got into that. I've always been big on, like, I like to play video games and compete against other people. And so that was a pretty good marriage between, you know, staying physically active and I live in South Dakota, and I'm sure, you know, it in Canada, what winters can be like. It's pretty tough to get out unless you've got some very specific gear for it.
I got a fat bike, so it's good fun.
Right. Right. I don't think they make them in the double XL size.
Yeah, right.
So I'll have to try to figure. I've been looking to see if I can figure something out. But yeah, so I rode a lot of Zwift over the winter last and you know, before Ragbri. And so I kind of tried to carry some of that fitness.
Okay.
And Ragbri, you know, supported you throw your gear on the truck. But then I started to get the bags and stuff last year. I started doing a couple of like short 1 or 2 day bikepacking trips to a town, you know, 50, 60 miles away.
Sure.
And I just had Valet straps and dry bags.
Okay.
Just,
that was the.
Yeah. Just strapped my stuff to. I even had just an old crappy Coleman tent that my dad found at Sturgis. Some people just buy a tent and just leave it behind. He just picked it up. He thought, "Eh, I bet Skylar will like this." So I was just staying in. You know, I had the tent poles, they're extra long tent poles. Just had them Valet strapped to the bike rack. Had all my dry bags strapped to the rack and everything like that. And that's kind of how I got into the bike packing side of it. Kind of figuring out the gear that I would need and you know, how to.
And then realize that's how you find out and figure out how, like, how much nicer it is to carry a bivy bag as opposed to like a big Coleman tent, right? Like,
right.
You're like, oh yeah, it's so much lighter.
Well, and so I have a unique challenge in all of my gear, being so tall.
Which bivy bag do you use?
Well, so I had just the SOL emergency bivy.
Oh, okay.
That I kept that on me just as a backup plan. Yeah. If I need to quick, you know, take shelter. And then I had what's the Ascend 9 Mile? It's the Bass Pro Shop tent. It's kind of a bivy tent.
Okay.
And I got that one. It's very budget friendly, but it's also 8'3" long.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So I can fit in it and I can relax my feet and I can put my hands above my head. I can actually, whereas that Coleman, yeah, I'm sleeping sideways in the fetal position.
Yeah. I think Alpkit from the UK, they make like a bivy bag that's extra long and extra wide. So you can like, so, but there's not too many companies that do, you know.
Yeah, the SOL has an extra long version of their middle. It's not the really small emergency bivy, but it's the next step up. And I looked at that, but I knew I was going to be sleeping in it a fair amount of nights. And I'm not, you know, I'm not racing or anything. I don't need to be in and out. So I can just set up the tent. And the tent, perfect. I actually, even when I was staying in the same place, I would pull the tent down, pack it onto the bike, just in case I got to, you know, hide from the rain or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I did just a lot of that and just the quick early bike packing trips. And I worked a lot with my local bike shop, Spoken Sport, here in Sioux Falls. They were really great. And they sponsored the tour for me as well. One of a handful of sponsors that I had to help me out. And a lot of them have done, you know, some pretty extensive bike trips and things like that. So I got a lot of direction from
that's
them.
Awesome.
I think that's always a good place to go. Straight to, you know, your local bike shop. And then, you know, podcasts like yours. I listen to a handful of podcasts about, you know, people doing bigger, longer bike trips, some of the bike racing stuff, and a lot of YouTube videos about how and what to pack.
Okay. Makes sense. And was there like we'll talk more about gear and stuff, but I had a question about like mindset. Like when you finish a big day on the bike and then you got to go perform, is there like a pivot to that? Is it challenging or is it a kind of a relief? Is it like an exhalation? You're like, ah, finally I'm back in my own zone.
Right. So the first three shows were really close to home. I think they were all, the first two were like 15 or 16 miles. And then the third one was in town here. So I got a group of people to ride with me around the bike trail to go to the show. So those were fairly easy, really light rides. The first couple on the long legs of the tour, I had not, because doing a stand-up show is a very mentally taxing thing.
Yeah.
Like, you actually get pretty tired, especially if you have like a two show night, that'll really wear you out. And I wasn't fully prepared for it the first couple of nights. It really was a shift. I was comparing it a lot to chess boxing.
Okay.
Actually, while I was out on the road, because you know, chess box, it's a very intense physical experience, and then a very intense mental challenge that you go back and forth from, and it took a few days to get back to kind of get the feel for it, right? Because I would come in so tired, but by the end, it really was that exhalation. It really was that like breath of fresh air, kind of a relief. Like, yeah, I did the ride. And now I do the show. And that's the nice thing I like about being on the road as a comic is all I have to do in a day, my entire job is to drive to the town and to tell my silly little jokes. That's all I have to do for the day. And when it becomes all I have to do is ride the bike and then get to town and do my silly little jokes. And once I got into the rhythm of that, it became a lot easier and it was more of a relief. But those first few were a real challenge. I felt kind of slow. Usually I feel kind of nimble and quick on my feet, but I really was kind of sluggish and just a little lost up there. I almost felt like I was new at it again
because okay.
I didn't quite have the sharpness required.
Yeah, because I feel like if you're tired and stuff, like, because it's in my mind, like, the playing the crowd is really important these days in comedy. It's become like, you know, it's more than just telling a good joke, but you got to be able to work the crowd. And
right.
If you're tired, you're just like, you're just not as like a whip, you know? So,
yeah, it's like when you get, if you're jet lagged or you're really tired after a big workout or something and somebody's trying to talk to you, those responses are always kind of delayed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you even get a little bit of frustration, something like, why are you asking me questions right now? Don't you know I'm tired?
Hey, you in the crowd, shut up. I'm tired.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. It's kind of hard to get people back on your side after you go all tired and grumpy on them.
Yeah, yeah. And were there any like rituals or routines that basically grounded you or helped you make that switch from biking to work in the crowd and doing comedy? I'd like to take a moment to thank a couple more sponsors of the Bikepack Adventures podcast. Redshift Sports was founded in 2013 by a team of mechanical engineers who also happen to be avid cyclists. From the beginning, they focused on taking a different approach to product development, drawing on their own experiences and needs to create components that make a meaningful difference to the riding experience. The highly popular shock-stop suspension system smooths out road imperfections, reducing fatigue and strain. You can check them out at redshiftsports.com or follow the affiliate link down in the show notes to help sustain the podcast. Use the promo code BPA15 to save 15% at checkout. Tailvin Cycling, designer of technical bikepacking equipment, has been creating waves in the cycling community for several years, having stepped outside the conventional boundaries of bikepacking equipment to find unique solutions that make the adventure all the better. Whether an endurance racer, bike tour, or bikepacker, these bags offer solutions for everyone. From their unique rear rack with quick release mechanism to their ingenious locking mechanism on their panniers that provide a rattle-free biking experience, Tailfin continues to push the envelope. I'm extremely pleased to have them supporting the podcast and to represent them on all my adventures.
Yep, a lot of it is just you get, you know, your body knows, your mind knows when you start to get into the routine of something. And so once I walk into the bar, like, that's all a part of the routine. You talk to some people. There's usually somebody that comes up to you and is like, hey, you the comedian? And they got something smart to say to you. And then, you know, then you're already writing something like, okay, this guy's going to try to talk to me during the show.
Okay.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
so
how it works, huh?
I'm going to be ready for it. He looks like Don Rickles. I'm going to say that, you know? And so you kind of prepare for those people. And so that starts your mind into that routine. Some people have like, they look through their notes or something like that. To use a phrase, it's kind of like riding a bicycle for me. Once I get on stage and start doing it, it all kind of falls into place.
Right, right.
But there is a lot to be said about that routine. You know, you sit down, you order a pizza, you talk to the owner of the bar, a couple people come up to you, you talk with the opening act or the other acts, your co-stars for the night, and kind of figure out the rhythm of the show and what they need and what they want and stuff. And so that all kind of just settles your mind into, it shifts your mind into that.
That's interesting, because I never really put that in perspective. Like, in my mind, it was just like, oh, you go up on stage and you do your thing. But no, like, it starts as soon as you walk in the door, because you're already looking at people, figuring out things, chatting to people, getting like, you maybe pick up a little idea for a joke or a bit or something that might, you know, get a good laugh in the crowd. So that's interesting. I never thought of it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. You find out who the town celebrity is, or everybody called the bartender at one place the mayor. And it was a small town. They don't have a mayor. They just, it's a town of like 200 people. So, but they all called the bartender the mayor, because he's the only person in town everybody knows.
That's funny. All right, what about your bike? What do you ride now? Like, I'm assuming the bikes has changed over the years, and is this something that came about through your local bike shop and their support?
Yep. Yeah. So I did get my bike through Spoken Sport. I went in to find out from them something a little more serious, because I still had that Specialized from college, and that was, you know, my main bike that I was riding. And I wanted to get, you know, something a little better, something a little more serious. And being 6'7", it was a challenge. And they said a lot of their distributors don't actually make the double XL bikes. A lot of companies don't even make the double XL bikes anymore, just because the demand was so low. And so we looked at a lot of different options. You know, you go full custom with the Dirty Sixer brand, and I wasn't a huge fan of those. So we settled in on Soma Fabrications makes, they make double XL, so it's a 66 frame. I got a Soma Double Cross, kind of a gravel cross touring bike, and got set up on that, and just, you know, basically just built it out with just really good components, just solid stuff, just, you know, that GRX group set and DT Swiss wheels and whatnot.
Nice,
you know,
perfect.
So just kind of got it all set up nice that way. And then part of the Spoken Sport, they gave me a free bike fit as well, to make sure everything was fully in line for me. And it's amazing the difference between being on a bike that you think fits and being on a bike that really actually fits.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially your size. I mean, once you're fit to a bike, when you do a good proper bike fitting, it's amazing the stuff they come up with, and you're like, oh wow, yeah, I never realized that this is so out of whack on me, you know?
Right, and a 5mm stem difference just is a world of difference. You wouldn't think that small of an adjustment. But yeah, and then they gave me a good deal on my bike bags as well, and so I've got like a Surly frame bag that they had in the shop, just a one-off that somebody had ordered way back in the day thinking they would sell it. And the service manager actually was like, that bag has been here longer than I have.
Oh wow.
We can give Skylar a really good deal on it. And so I paid less than 50% actually of what it should have been, what it was marked on the shelf. But I tried to buy a different one first, but that Surly frame bag fit exactly perfectly just off the shelf into the bike. And they looked at it, and the one guy goes, I got a custom bag that doesn't fit that good.
Yeah. And, so, but not waterproof.
Right, yeah, well, resistant.
Water resistant
and waterproof are two very different things.
And it also has to do with how well the zip is closed, I guess.
That too, yeah. And one of the zips has a little flap over the top of it, and the top one doesn't, and that's where I went wrong.
Oh, interesting.
I had the check in that top bag that doesn't have the flap over. The stuff in the bottom, my batteries and everything like that, that all stayed very dry.
Okay, cool.
So I put my checks down there for the rest of the tour.
Yeah, and makes sense. Is there any gear, like what was your essential gear for both riding and performing? Is there like any certain things you have to carry that would stand out?
So I had the comics bring the sound gear along. A lot of the shows we had to have our own sound gear, and when I'm in the car, I just always have backup sound gear, you know, just in case. But otherwise, it's mostly just the standard stuff, but I did have koozies on the bike. I had hundreds of my merch that I sell.
Oh, okay.
At the show, and I had it dialed in. 32 koozies weighed 1 pound.
What is a koozie?
A koozie, a beer koozie.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
A can koozie.
Yeah, yeah.
See if I got one here.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we call those that? I don't even know what we call them, but yeah, okay. I know what you mean.
Don't have one in reach here. But yeah, so I had my logo printed on them, and I got the logo here. I had a local artist draw up for me.
That is awesome.
He really knocked.
You'll have to email that to me too. So for the podcast artwork.
Yeah, absolutely. As Adam Googe was the artist, so I'll give him a shout out. But yeah, so and on the backside of those koozies, I had the sponsor pay, you know, for half the koozies. And yeah, I had it figured out exactly how many koozies was a pound because I had to I'm fairly close to the weight limit on the wheels on my bike. So I had to make sure I managed my weights. And it's easier to pedal up the hill to summit when you don't have extra weight on the bike.
So I guess as a big guy, you're also heavy, so you're already pushing the limits of like what the bike wheels can handle or getting up there.
Yeah,
anyways.
Yeah, they're like a 285-pound weight limit, I think, on the wheels, and I'm 220, so we only and the bike's 25 pounds, so we've only got so much to work with.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, so I mean, I carried most of the basic stuff, and then. There were a couple of shows. I had comics that had bags of koozies as well, and I actually ended up at one of the stops a couple of weeks before the tour and just dropped off a cachet of koozies in the green room. But those koozies I sold to since I got a sponsor to pay for half of them, I actually donated half of the money that I raised to Falls Area Single Track. It's their nonprofit.
Oh, that's very cool.
Project here. They're working on our big park in town, Great Bear. They're working on a big single track trail project out there. So I was able to donate a bit of money to them. But yeah, otherwise, I mean, I've got my multi-tool and my bivy bags and my I did have a couple of tripods, like smaller tripods that I brought along. So I like to get video clips of the show. I was trying to do as much content of the rides as I could, but some of those days the rides were so brutal,
especially if it's raining every day. That's even more demoralizing.
Yeah, exactly. And it really just dragged on me, so it's hard to like I was trying to do these episodes with all the clips and stuff, and then I was like, I've got like 4 days in a row with no clips because the weather was just awful.
Yeah. Any gear regrets, things you wish you would have not brought, or MVPs, things you're happy you brought?
I run a tubeless setup, but I brought an inner tube, you know, just in case. Yep. Kind of an emergency situation. I never ended up having to use it. I didn't even get a little bit of a puncture to see any sealant coming out of the tires or anything. A lot of like the emergency stuff I wouldn't have left behind, even though I never used it. But just about everything else, because my weight was so tight, everything else was used. Like I had two pairs of riding clothes, one t-shirt, and my show pants were water resistant, still not waterproof. Yeah. And so those were my rain pants as well, you know, and my cooler riding. The only thing I had, a kind of like a fleece undershirt, like just like a sweatshirt. In case it got cool, but it was so hot. My mom came to one of the first shows. I actually just left her with that. And I was like, this will open up some space in my bags. It weighs, you know, 3/4 of a pound. So I now can carry.
Get more koozies. More
koozies. Yep. Exactly. So I left that with her. And the next day it was cloudy and cold and rainy, and I was shivering, and I was like, yep, shoulda that. And it would have been the only day I wanted that jacket, but I really did kind of wish I would have had it for that.
Yeah.
Otherwise everything was very tightly, you know, I had my little tube of toothpaste. Like I had everything kind of perfectly narrowed down to the bare minimums that I would need.
Nice, man. That sounds cool. So what was it like doing comedy on the road? I mean, how did the audience react to this whole concept of you touring on bike to get to the shows. And I'll add a second part to that. Like, did your material evolve during the tour based on these experiences, or is that going to be something that comes later?
Yeah. So, a lot of people kind of didn't fully understand or believe what I was doing.
Kind of like your buddies back in high school or college or whatever, that were like, you cycled exactly to another town.
Exactly. Yeah. When I told people at the beginning, they're like, oh, so you're riding an e-bike? And I was like, no, we're doing this acoustic. We're going to do this by the power of my legs. But yeah, a lot of people kind of didn't, they thought I was driving from town to town and then doing like bike rides with people around town before the show. And once they figured it out that it was kind of a spectacle. And then after the show, you know, people wanted to see the bike and like they wanted to see the tent and ask some follow-up questions about kind of like what and how and why. That was the biggest question, why. And by the end, I responded very honestly with, I don't know. I guess I'm just dumb.
Yeah. Bad life choices.
Right. It would have taken very little time to drive my car here, and it would have cost less, actually. Yeah. But so that was just a big part of it, was just kind of the spectacle and explaining. And so it did become where the opening of the show, I usually open the show a very specific way, but I started opening the show talking about the bike, you know, maybe my ride that day. And I had a few jokes that I had worked up after the first couple of shows that were like really solid openers about the bike. Why am I riding the bike? What started me riding the bike? Because I couldn't afford a horse.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was something that definitely, it did evolve, and it's still coming. I've been hitting the open mics again with a little more regularity and kind of working out some of these new pieces about the bike tour, about, you know, the ride and some of the things, just that generally as a cyclist, some of the stuff that I go through and some of the tropes that we see as specifically attached to cyclists.
Yeah, yeah. And so your shows, were they in bars or they were like in national, like parks? Was it I might have misunderstood that at the start. I know you mentioned about the kind of like ragbri style thing.
Right. Yeah. So the goal was to have the shows near a park. There were a couple of places where I was thinking about, I didn't have a show and I was thinking about having a fallback. Some of these local parks, you can just put in for a permit to use like the amphitheater or something like that. But then that doesn't pay, right? You have to pay probably a $50 fee or something to use the amphitheater. Maybe I could put up a tip jar and get five or six campers to come out. But we did mostly bars, a couple of restaurants. We did a clean show in Watertown at like a pretzel themed restaurant. They got like pretzel calzones and stuff like that. So mostly bars, couple of restaurants, a steakhouse and a taco place.
Any standout experiences, things that like, or shows that really just stood out to you as like something that was truly different or it felt special?
Bruce, South Dakota, they were incredibly welcoming. It was really great. They had somebody sponsor an extra Native Nations cannabis, actually was a bonus sponsor on the show. And this one was
so everybody was high.
Right. No, I would have been way funnier if they were, but no, yeah, they came to pass out some stuff and they helped with like advertising and stuff. And Bruce, South Dakota is a town of 100 some people.
Oh, wow. That's small. Okay.
And we had like 60 or so people at the bar. And the bar owner was like, sorry, it's not more. Yeah, they had wanted and expected more. But that bar, I mean, that's packed. It was a small bar. And it was an incredible show all the way through. A good friend of mine, Jerry Irby, I work with on the road a lot. He opened the show and he was crushing so hard. The owner came to me and he's like, if I were you, I'd be nervous because he's doing really well and you're going to have to really raise the bar.
Thanks.
And you're right. That's the thing about a comedy show. Some people think you want a bad opener. That way you're going to be funnier by comparison. But it's exactly,
I think it's the opposite, right? Because if the guy before is super funny, everybody's already laughing. So like they're waiting to just laugh,
exactly. Right? You're in a good mood. If the guy in front of you is not funny, then people are like, well, this next guy's going to be terrible too. And so we've already checked out. But yeah, that show, it ended up just being absolutely incredible. The staff at J Street Pub was really great to me, and the town was amazing. They offered, you know, some people offered me to come sleep in their little cabin next to their lake house, and they're like, we got laundry machines, you can do your laundry. Didn't end up taking them up on that. Actually, the owner of the bar offered me to stay in a camper, which I thought was his. And then when I got there, he's like, yeah, so Dave should be home around 6 o'clock. He hasn't gotten back to me yet about you sleeping in this camper. I was like, I'm going to go to the campground. I'm going to wake up to a shotgun in Bruce, South Dakota.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They left me with some like very high quality honey. They have a honey farm.
Ooh, nice.
Right by there, which I was thinking, you know, that'll be some good ride food. I can just dip spoons of honey. But I ended up actually passing it off to the comics who brought me that resupply outside of Huron, South Dakota. I was like, here, this for showing up. It was only a 10-mile drive for them, so not that big of a deal. But I was like, for coming out and bringing me a resupply, I'm just going to gift you guys this honey.
Nice.
And leave it with you. So yeah, Bruce was incredible. That was one of the better ones on the road. The Wharf in Corona was really fun because I got to hang out with one of my old college basketball teammates and kind of catch up with him.
That's cool.
And then the Rush in Sioux Falls was, it's, you know, my hometown show, and it's always tough to get like the hometown show, I feel like, because people are like, well, you live here, we can catch you next time.
Okay.
So it's
tough
to get people out. But we really did pack the room for the Rush, and I thought it seemed like kind of a rowdy crowd when the host was on stage. There were quite a rowdy crowd. But the feature act, Nathan Holtz, he's a great comic based out of Sioux Falls. He's been at it for a really long time, and he knows all the tricks, and he got the crowd all kind of settled in and focused on the show, and it turned out to be just a really solid one. Because nice. Sometimes you go in a Saturday night show at a bar and six people know that there's going to be a show and there's 100 people at the bar, and so
they want to talk, and they're not like, whatever, they didn't hear. They're like, I came here to drink and shoot the shit, right? Like,
yeah, we didn't come for this tall, curly-headed goof. We came here to play pool, and so we're going to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Makes sense. So, yeah, so I guess there's a whole process to getting those people tuned in, right?
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of tricks to it, and there's a lot of different ways to do it. There are gentle ways, and there are rough ways, and you know, he managed very well. He got everybody on track without upsetting anybody. And we had the owners and managers of the bar, I didn't realize, were the front and center table. And so once we figured out that they were there, we're like, okay, we really have to make sure that this looks good so that, you know, maybe they'll ask us back for another show.
And have they?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
But it was a friend of mine had just jumped into being the events manager, and it was actually, I think, the first show that he had set up there.
Oh, okay.
And but everybody was happy with it, and you know, there's a trick to showing people how many the manager, you know, how many people are there for the show. So I sent the host up like, how many people are here for the show tonight? And everybody claps. And it's like there's six people in the back of the room playing blackjack that didn't clap that they were there for the show, and the manager looks around when that happens, and so they saw, you know, that's a dollar sign in every seat,
yeah,
in
yeah,
their eyes. So
that is cool. Good move. What was life like between the shows, you know, I mean, other than the biking? Did you mostly camp? Did you hotel at all? Couch surfing, warm showers, do you know what those are?
I did look into warm showers, but I didn't get into the because I know there's one or two in different places that I was going to be, but I didn't sign up for the membership. So I mostly kind of boondock camped.
Okay.
I would go to, there was a couple places that had free camping, and there was a couple places that I just camped for free. And some of it, I'm going to set up a tent late at night, and I'm just going to leave in the morning early. Like, I'm not going to go check in at the ranger station or wait for them to open or whatever. I'm just going to kind of shuffle on through and try and be a good steward. So I did stay at a lot of campgrounds. I think 15 of the 19 nights where I was out in the wild, I was camping.
Okay.
And I stayed in a comic friend's backyard. I set up my tent. He's like, I have a hide-a-bed couch. I was like, it's not going to be, it's probably going to hurt my back because they always do, but it's not going to be long enough. I was surprisingly comfortable on my air mattress.
No Toyota Corollas or?
Right. Yeah. No Prius to sleep in the back of. Yeah.
Oh yeah, is it Prius? See, I lost
it. It was a Prius. Yep.
I can ruin the joke.
You got that hatchback for the extra space.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I did end up getting a hotel. So I had that hotel in Wabe, and then I stayed in a hotel another night. Brookings is actually one of the last nights on the road where there's a gnarly. It was a monsoon level storm came through.
Okay, let's just
Yeah, an inch and a half of rain in like an hour, and the winds were blowing 30 miles an hour. It was crazy. And I took shelter at the bowling alley where we did the show until there was a break in the storm. And then I ran to the hotel really quick. The guy at the desk was mad that I was showing up at like 3 a.m, but that's when I could be there, you know? And it just stormed all night again.
Yeah.
And then there were two nights, Huron and Mitchell. I also stayed two more nights in a hotel, and there was the opposite reason. There was because overnight it was only getting down to like 85 degrees.
Oh, okay. That's
so,
yeah, that's pretty, that's hot, right?
That's tough.
I'm so Canadian Celsius. I'm like, I'm doing the math in my head. I'm like, oh yeah, I think that's hot. I'm not sure.
I should have had a conversion chart here. Yeah, no, it's very, very hot. And I like my room around 60 to sleep.
So oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Very much the, a significant drop from where that is.
Yeah.
And I was like, those are big rides. So I was like, I got to get some decent sleep. And I wasn't married to all, you know, wild camping, the whole thing. I went out with the plan, you know, partially to save money on the trip, but with the plan to mostly stay in the tent. And that's where I ended up.
That's what you did. Yeah. Did you take any like rest days, you know, where you had a few days to get somewhere or a couple days, or how did that manage out for you?
So usually most of the shows, you know, obviously they're weekend shows. So I was like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay.
I think I had a 4-day run in a row. But yeah, so there were a couple of times where I had, you know, I've got 80 miles, but I've got 3 days to do it.
Oh, that's nice.
To get to the next stop. And then there was a one, where did I get to? Aberdeen. I got to Aberdeen like 2 days early. And so, yeah, I was able to just kind of sit there. I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to be putting any miles on the bike, which I was putting on, you know, 15, 20 miles a day just to run errands and get dinner and stuff like that. But yeah, so I had a few days off here and there where I was able to get some good rest, and you just kind of refuel, recover, and get ready for the next big push.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, you mentioned earlier on about documenting and, you know, and take some video and stuff throughout the days, when you're biking. What else did you document on your trip? Like, did you do much on social media? Did you, was it more photos, reels, blog posts, that kind of thing?
I intended to have more reels and videos than I did. But I'm mostly active on Facebook. As a comic, you kind of have to have every social media available.
Podcast or two.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Any sort of content producer. And yeah. I've had friends that applied to comedy clubs and they said, well, your follower count's a little low, but we did like your stuff. And so that's something that they really do think. Because if you got 20,000 followers, that's an ad for 20,000 people, you know, that they don't have to pay for. But yeah, so I tried to keep. There's a couple blog posts that I have on my website, and some of there was one that I just, while I was riding, I just opened up the voice notes basically and just copy pasted that straight to Facebook. So it's, some of it's kind of illegible because you know, voice to text, it thinks you're talking about a camping nolo or something. You're talking about going camping in the bush or
whatever. Yeah.
It's it completely threw some things off. But yeah, so I have some of that. And then I do have like some clips and stuff of the actual shows. And I like to do, when I'm on the road, I like to do hotel reviews, where I do kind of a rapid fire run through the hotel room that I'm staying
in. Oh, I did see one of those videos. Yeah. And it was a random click. So I was like, what's he doing?
Yeah. And so I do have a couple of those. One of them, I just got a new phone. And so I was going through my old phone to like process through some of the videos and stuff. And I found, here's one from, I think it was Webster, South Dakota, where I had the video from the hotel that I never actually edited and put up. So I put it up and my friend was like, did you ride your bike to Webster again?
No, oh, fancy.
Yeah, nope. That's just an old video. But yeah, so I had a handful of things. Before I left on the tour, I did a couple of like run throughs of my gear and stuff. You know, it's something I'm newer to. So a little bit of a learning curve for some of those videos. But yeah, I was trying to get some of the information about what I was doing out there. Cause some people, you know, I had a lot of people asking me, some of the bike nerds were like, so what do you even ride? Cause I don't know where you would find a bike that fits. And so I had to tell them about, you know, the whole process of getting that and everything like that. So
I think you could do a whole comedy bit with just like a little Shetland pony, like, you know, like 6'7" on this little horse that's the size of a donkey or smaller.
Yeah. I've always wanted to see if I could get a miniature Great Dane.
Oh, there you go.
I thought that'd be funny, just walking through the neighborhood, really confuse some folks.
Or do like people do with like Eiffel Tower, Leaning Tower of Pisa, where you make pictures where it looks really small and they're like, wow, look how big he is. Just taking it from the right angle. It's like this Great Dane, but it's actually only like 2 feet high.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, on reflections on your tour, what did you learn? What did the tour teach you? And you know, as a cyclist, comedian, and how would you do it again?
So would I do it again was a question that a lot of people asked, especially as they found out how brutal the weather was, because a lot of headwinds, a lot of rain. And South Dakota, I was like, it'll be easy because it's eastern South Dakota. It's mostly flat.
Except for Summit, yeah.
Right, except for Summit, which apparently is at the top of a hill. I learned that. But yeah, and the difficulties turned out to be, you know, the weather and the wind, and the wind is just a constant fight in South Dakota. But yeah, I would do it again. I'm in the planning. I have drafted the email to send to what I want to be my anchor show next summer when I try to do this again. And I'm going to work on completing that goal of hitting all of the state parks in South Dakota by bicycle. So that means we're going to be going west next year, and that's where the hills are. So I'm going to have to try to drop some weight and strengthen the legs, because I'll be climbing quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, in a thing like this, like, I feel like sometimes when I just go on the road as a comic and I go to a place I've never been, I come back changed as a person just a little bit. Some of it's new experience, some of it's talking to new people, and some of it's just that reflection time alone in the car. Cause sometimes I'll have, you know, 8, 9, 10 hour drives between shows. And when those drives become rides where you're pedaling a bike, and so you have just kind of a physical outlet and you've got nothing left but for your mind. There's listening to music sometimes, but I actually, one of my headphones stopped working because of the rain, because of the water. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have my headphones in for a lot of the tour. A lot of the time was just spent sitting and reflecting. Mm. And some of that time, you know, I tried to put to good use for, you know, plans for the content production of the tour and stuff like that, and plans for the next one that I do. But it's inevitable that you're gonna go inward, and some of those things that, you know, maybe you've been avoiding facing and been avoiding kind of working on within yourself, those things come to the surface.
Yeah.
And part of it is, I think, because you're too tired to fight those thoughts back. And so you're kind of forced to process those things and forced to go through a bit of growth too, because there's a reflection, and you can't really sit there and lie to yourself when you're climbing a peanut butter mud gravel hill into Summit, South Dakota. And you're thinking about, you know, these places where things have gone wrong and changes that you might need to make in your life. And a lot of it does come back to just in different places in my life. There were times where I wasn't just getting on the bike, just get in, start doing the thing, you know, start pushing, and it'll work out. You'll find your way through, even if you don't know exactly how you're going to get there, what route you're going to take.
Yeah. And there's a level, I've always said there's a level of therapy like process to riding a bike. You know, it's like you get into your zone or your Zen space, and it's where your brain, like you said, processes. It comes in, it's got to get processed because your body's using all its energy to push the pedals, and you can't, I never thought of it in the sense that you can't fight off the thoughts. So now you have to do something with it. And sometimes it's like singing songs while you're riding. Sometimes it's maybe putting together a joke or a bit for a comedian, and whatever it is.
At the clouds.
Yeah.
I did a fair amount of shouting at the clouds.
Yes. Probably on the way to Summit, I presume.
But. Yeah, exactly. I'm not afraid of you anymore. You're going to do what you're going to do, and I'm going to keep riding.
Yeah.
And that's really all I can do.
What would you change if you're on your next, you know, comedy bike tour?
Well, if I could stop it from raining so damn much, that would be a big thing.
I know it's almost always wrong, but you know, weather forecasts, if you just choose the days where it's going to rain, it'll probably be not raining.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I picked June because I figured there's not, other than Father's Day, there's really not much for holidays in June to compete with, and the weather is usually fairly nice. I was mostly concerned that it was going to be really hot throughout June, and it's right before we get to corn sweat season, so it's not incredibly humid. So I feel like the timing was good. It was a weird summer
where
we had a lot of rain and stuff. I think I might stay in hotels a little more the next time around. And I did, I'll be honest, I kind of underpriced some of the shows. Some of them was because I've got good relationships with some of these places where I said, I'm going to cut you a deal because I like working with you. But some of it was that I didn't have the confidence, and I was a little afraid that I might not fill the calendar for the tour. Cause that's a big thing. This is my first real comedy tour that I've set up. Like, I've done week long runs and stuff like that, but I've never just like set up my own tour. And
there's a lot to organizing some, right? Cause you had other comedians as well, or comics coming out, and like, it's a lot of organizing. I organize an event, I'm wearing the jersey for it right now, and it is a ton of work. Like,
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So I had 11 extra comics to book, and logistics of the gear getting to the places and stuff like that. And I didn't want to, my first tour, I didn't want it to be, you know, 8 shows or whatever. So I think we could have done a little more there. I was really happy with being able to raise the money for a nonprofit, for something that I thought was cool. Mm-hmm. I actually found out about them on another podcast, somebody that I didn't realize that one of the hosts from the podcast was from Sioux Falls.
Oh, that's cool.
So he was pitching the Falls area single track. But I think I can get, I put some of my own money into the koozies as well. But I think next time I'll charge a little more for the shows, and I'll have sponsors take on the full burden mm-hmm. of the merchandise. And then I'm just going to give all the merch money back to whatever benefit that I decide to go with the next time.
That's amazing. I had a question. I just can't find it. so yeah, we actually talked about that. I guess I'm not sure if we really answered this, but how has this experience influenced your future creative projects? I know you mentioned that you're working through some stuff, right? That you're doing in some open mics and trying to, what's the lingo word that you guys use, but like just lock it down, make sure it's tight and.
Yeah. I definitely got some new bits out of it. Some of it, sometimes you have to remove yourself from a thing for a while, before you find a way to make it funny. Mm-hmm. Like I was a process server for a long time. That was my day job.
What does that mean? I don't even know what that is.
Like Pineapple Express. I delivered legal documents to people being evicted from their house, or they're getting divorced or whatever it is. So the perpetual.
No, that's you've been served.
Yep.
Can you sign this document?
Yeah. Bad guy with the envelope.
Yeah.
And I did that for almost 18 years, and I'm just now, after I've been out of it for 5 years, I've been out of it for 2 or 3 years, and I'm just now starting to write jokes about it that I actually like, that actually work. So sometimes you have to be removed from it a little bit. There are some things that just kind of they lend themselves naturally to. I'll tell people about the tour a little bit at the top of the show sometimes, and you know, talking about that trip into Summit, that whole day kind of lended itself pretty naturally to a new bit, and so that came pretty quick. But there's more stuff that I have ideas and I have pieces just a premise of that I think will be somewhere someday, but it probably won't come to me until a long day on the bike. I'll be sitting there with nothing left to think about,
and
suddenly it'll just kind of click.
Yeah. When you're at your most tired, you'll be thinking about this joke that you're still working on, and all of a sudden it'll be like, you'll have to like, I have to stop. Hold on. Voice note. Yep. Voice note.
Right. Yep.
Colnago.
A little.
So I any upcoming shows, festivals, collaborations that people should watch out for?
I will be in Brookings, South Dakota. This just up the road from me, so I'm probably going to actually ride my bike and just camp out for the weekend at Wooden Legs Brewing on September 5th and 6th. And then in November, I'm working on a run in North Dakota. I'll be in Lansford, North Dakota on the 15th of November, and Bismarck, North Dakota on the 16th on a Sunday.
Awesome. And if, you know, based on how next year's your plan for the next one going west in North Dakota goes, would you be
South Dakota?
Sorry,
yeah. The Dakotans will get you for calling it the wrong one.
The Dakotas.
No, that's even worse.
Is it? Just like, how dare you compare us and put us together as one thing?
We are two separate things.
Yeah. So South Dakota, if that goes well, will you plan something further off in different states, or like, is there a thought of like making it bigger?
Yep. The original plan while I was out on this one was to go farther, and it might still be. It kind of depends on how much time I have available for it next summer, training and for the actual tour, and it kind of depends on just generally where my life is at. But to Western South Dakota for sure, we might go beyond, and it might be the following summer where I do something even bigger. And I have been thinking about doing something a little later in the season, catch a window to get out of South Dakota on the bike before the snow gets too bad.
Okay.
And just go south as far as possible.
And what's south of South Dakota? North something?
Everything. nice weather is what south of South Dakota.
It doesn't. See, my geography of the U.S. is not great when it comes to like the Midwest area.
Yeah, straight south is what do we got? Nebraska and Iowa, kind of to the east there, and then on down to Kansas. And
there was another comedian that was biking. I actually had shot them a message probably 2-3 months ago, and they never replied. But then you messaged me. I was like, hey, karma comes around. But you know, it might be cool too if you can like tee up with other cycling comedians. I don't imagine there's a ton of cycling comedians, but it would be neat if you could put together a show just based on everybody cycling. Like,
yeah, I thought that would be cool too. Like, if I could get like a e-bike sponsor where you could do around a larger metro area, you could do a bicycle comedy tour or a comedy festival. I mean, and have all the comics, you know, you can put somebody on an e-bike that's not in very good shape and they could make it. Comics notoriously not the most physically active people in general, but I figured it'd be fun to, because in you get some goofy things that happen on the ride.
Oh, that'd be epic.
From town to town. I thought that'd be a lot of fun. I pitched the idea to one of my friends who ran a comedy festival, and he said, good luck. I hope you do well. I will not be involved in another comedy festival. So,
fair enough. Anything I missed that you want to kind of chat about?
No, I run through my sponsors real quick.
Yeah, do it. Yeah.
Sunny Radio gave me a lot of like advertisement. Daily Clean Food and Drink. They didn't really do anything, but that's my sister's restaurant, so I put their name on the poster. Spoken Sport, and then Common Sense Urban Legend. They were my koozie sponsor.
Okay.
And Bar Comedy USA as well. They helped me set up a couple of the shows along the way. And then our beneficiary, Falls Area Single Track, which is doing some really cool stuff. You don't think mountain bike trails in eastern South Dakota, really, but they've got some really awesome single track off of our bike trail system here, which we've got a really nice like loop bicycle trail system. And then that new park that they're working on at Great Bear is going to be pretty awesome.
Nice.
I feel kind of funny that I donated the money for that trail project when it's way beyond my skill level in mountain biking, but I think it's awesome that it exists.
And maybe they'll lend you a bike so you can go ride it.
Right.
I actually have, I know somebody in Saskatchewan, Canada, which is probably the flattest part of Canada for sure, but maybe if it's just incredibly flat, and they have some pretty good single track work going on where a friend of mine lives. So it's like, yeah, if they can do it, I guess anybody can.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm not putting you on the spot or anything, but do a bit. I'm listening. No, I'm joking.
When people ask me that at the bar, I ask them to pay me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I'm not working for free. I'll be on stage in an hour, actually.
Oh, yeah? You doing a show tonight?
No, not really. Okay. No, that's what I tell them.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right, man. Well, this is super fun. I'm glad you reached out. It's a great way to roll back into my end of summer routines of getting back on podcasts and stuff. And so super, super fun convo.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I was like, it's a shot in the dark. We'll see what's going on. But I feel like you said, it is kind of a unique thing. I heard that there's a guy that rode across America on a BMX bike and did comedy shows.
Oh, maybe that's the one I was like, talking about. Yeah.
That might have been the guy.
I'm gonna open up my Instagram right now, because there's probably a message sent to him. I probably will never find it, but.
Yeah, he had gotten a little traction. And I talked to another older comic that had been around. You know, he started working in the 80s. He was opening for like Steve Harvey and Tommy Chung and stuff.
Okay.
He's like, yeah, I had a friend that rode his bicycle to comedy gigs in the 80s. And he had a pretty brutal time doing it. So
I imagine.
I've found out it's a fairly unique thing, but there are actually more people than I had thought that had done something like this. So I did have a little bit to base it off of, but it was a cool idea. It was a wild idea, but now I'm in it and I'm just gonna have to get on the bike and do it again.
Yeah, man. Sounds super fun. Thanks for everything, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Bikepack Adventures podcast. Skylar Bulks reminded us that adventure doesn't always mean scaling mountains or crossing deserts. It can also mean showing up to a comedy club on two wheels, saddle sore and ready to make people laugh. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to check out Skylar's work at skylarbulks.com and follow his journey on Instagram at Skylar Bulks. And if you're feeling inspired to combine your passions in unexpected ways, maybe it's time to start planning your own version of Jokes and Spokes. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with your fellow bikepackers, comics, or anyone who loves a good story. Until next time, keep on pedaling. I want to end the show by thanking all my listeners once again for the emails and comments I regularly receive from you. It really helps motivate me and keep me going with this project and to continue sharing people's amazing stories. If you have any comments or questions, you can email me at chris@bikepackadventures.ca or go to bikepackadventures.ca and shoot me a message through the contact form. You can also check out the webpage for past podcast episodes, bikepacking routes throughout Canada, blog posts, videos, and touring tips. Lastly, I'd like to once again thank all the individuals and companies that are supporting the podcast. Head over to bikepackadventures.ca/partners for some amazing deals. If you're enjoying the show and would like to become a supporting member, head over to www.patreon.com/bikepackadventures to sign up. Patreons get to enjoy early access and ad-free podcast episodes. You can also support the show by sending a one-time donation through PayPal. This money all goes back into the podcast, helping me to cover the costs associated with running the show, buy new equipment when necessary, and continue to produce the high-quality content that you've become accustomed to. Much appreciated, and keep on pedaling.